Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Between the Tackles. It is super wild card weekend. The regular season's in the past. All these teams that remain are 0-0. It's the best time of year, let's be honest. I am so stoked for playoff football, glued to my TV all weekend. As you can tell, I'm not Joe. Joe had a prior commitment tonight, had to miss the episode. I'm sure he is very bummed out about that because he too also loves playoff football. But I am here again alongside my pal Manish Mehta. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Burge. I'm ready to get the football coma by, you know, Sunday night after watching so many games. It's like sensory overload, but I can't wait. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, I even if my team's not in it, like it's been for the last 5 years, I'm glued to my TV for playoff football. It's actually the only sport that I care to watch playoff games of teams that are not my own. I can't do it. I can't do it for basketball. I can't do it for hockey. Can't do it.
I can't do anything for hockey, but that's a different discussion for a different time.
Yeah. So let's get right into it here. Black Monday has come and gone. There are quite a few openings on the list here. Manish, you want to take that away? This is kind of your thing here.
Yeah. So 7 openings. It's typical for, you know, this time on the NFL calendar, you get about 20% turnover in the NFL each season. Obviously, the big news this week was that John Harbaugh, who had been the Ravens coach for 18 seasons, a Super Bowl champion, parted ways with the Ravens in, you know, whether it was a mutual parting of the ways or whether it was just time for Harbaugh to go because he had lost the locker room, you know, depending on what you believe that's out there. The bottom line is that he is now, I believe, the most coveted free agent in recent years. And I think, you know, all 7 teams who have openings, or the 6 teams, I should say, other than Baltimore, that have openings would love to have him. You know, when this news initially came to light early in the week, I initially believed that it's a no-brainer that the Giants would want to go after him and that the Giants would be a great fit for him as well. You know, when you look at these openings, I think the Giants are the most desirable. Obviously, he can't go to the Ravens, but having Jackson Dart there, having Malik Nabers there, having, you know, a stable ownership. Now, the Giants have fallen on hard times for the last, you know, decade or so, but they have a longstanding history of stable ownership and being a really solid place to be a head coach. And I think that would make the most sense for Harbaugh. But I want to get your thoughts on, when you look at the available openings across the league, what do you think is the most desirable team, not only for Harbaugh, but for any of these candidates? And what place do you think would be, you know, a place that you would really want to shy away from unless you have no other options as a head coaching candidate?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think we're going to agree on this because we kind of just hit on the Giants. The Giants are definitely right on the top of my list for the reasons you just outlined. Honestly, the Ravens have to be at the top of any list, too, because they have 2-time MVP Lamar Jackson. They have talent on both sides of the ball. They have Derrick Henry still maybe at the in the twilight of his career, but he's still running, you know, like he was 5 years ago. The Ravens, to me, you know, with again another team with stable ownership, they've had stability for 18 years. They're obviously looking to go in a different direction as things kind of got stale, I guess you could say, with Harbaugh. I personally was shocked that the Ravens decided to move on from him, especially after this year. I mean, Lamar Jackson was hurt for a good portion of the season, which anytime your quarterback gets hurt, you expect to kind of take a hit on your record and your standings. But, I mean, at the end of the day, those two definitely top the list. I think the Titans are an intriguing one too, because, you know, they have Cam Ward coming off his rookie season. We've seen, you know, a couple of quarterbacks in the as early as this year with Drake May and Caleb Williams, former top picks, change a head coach and find their stride in year 2. So you got to think that, you know, given what Cam Ward's talent level is at, that has to be enticing. Obviously, you're looking at the quarterback when you're looking at these teams. As far as teams that I would not really be interested in going to, the Cardinals are probably right up there. You have this uncertain situation with Kyler Murray and what that is. Probably going to be looking for a new quarterback there. Obviously, the Browns with Kevin Stefanski being let go is that. And the Raiders. The Raiders have to be at the bottom. They're a team that just hasn't been able to put it together. I would say one of the more incompetent ownership with Mark Davis over the last decade or whatever it's been with the Raiders. You know, Tom Brady's there, but you know, who knows what he is actually going to be in that type of role. And they don't really have a quarterback. Geno Smith, that experiment failed miserably this year. So I would not want anything to do with the Raiders. And real quick, before I throw it back to you, Manish, with the Giants, you know, when's the last time that they've hired kind of like a seasoned head coach to come in? I want to say it's been since Harbaugh. I'm sorry, since Coughlin was there.
Yeah.
Like they've had what, Ben McAdoo, they had Joe Judge, Brian Daboll. They took chances on guys that have really never been head coaches before. I can't think of anybody who was in between there, but Harbaugh screams a fit for the Maras if they want to bring stability to that organization.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. You're right. You know, after Coughlin, I believe they've all been first-time head coaches. And that's why the names that have been linked to the Giants early, in addition to Harbaugh, Kevin Stefanski, who has already met with Giants brass. Frankly, I thought he was in the driver's seat to get the job before the news broke that Harbaugh was available. And Mike McCarthy, who I believe next week is going to meet with the Giants. And, you know, when we had Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network on several weeks back, he had mentioned McCarthy as a potential fit for the Giants for a number of different reasons, including the fact that the Giants several years back made a play for McCarthy and were very interested in him. So I'm wondering if John Mara would go back to McCarthy or, you know, lean towards Harbaugh or Stefanski. Frankly, I'd be very surprised if one of those three didn't wind up being the next head coach. You know, being a seasoned guy with experience as opposed to a hot young guy making their first head coaching, you know, making their first foray into head coaching, I think makes more sense for the Giants. I think they're going to go with a guy who's got previous head coaching experience. You know, you had mentioned the Titans. I agree with you. It's an intriguing spot. Mike Borgonzi, their general manager, is heading the search. He comes from Kansas City, so it's no surprise that they're interviewing Matt Nagy and Steve Spagnuolo from Kansas City. I'm curious to see whether they'll go with a second time third, you know, a second time head coach or a younger guy. You know, I just think that the safer play for all of these teams is to go with somebody who's gone through the rigors of being a head coach. You know, I look at this past head coaching cycle and the New York Jets and Aaron Glenn, who after this season admitted that, look, there's a relatively steep learning curve for a new head coach. So if you're a general manager, you know, do you want to essentially throw away one or potentially two seasons as the head coach gets on the job training? Or do you want somebody who's got a proven track record of winning to hit the ground running, like Kevin Stefanski and John Harbaugh and Mike McCarthy? I always thought that, you know, this notion of retread coach was overblown. In fact, I always looked at it as if you're a retread, you're probably in a better position to help out your new team right away, because you've gone through the ups and downs of learning on the job and you can kind of skip that part. And you know exactly what worked the first time, what didn't work, and you can apply that to your next job. And, you know, every time we have a discussion like this, the name that comes to the forefront is, you know, your favorite head coach, Bill Belichick, who had some success in Cleveland, but clearly learned from the things that didn't work. And, you know, the rest is history in terms of how he turned out as a head coach in the NFL. So, you know, I think, you know, the Titans, as you mentioned, is an intriguing option. The Falcons also are too. You know, whether or not you believe in Michael Penix or not, it's undeniable that they've got great young skill position talent on offense. I'm curious if they do bring in an offensive-minded coach, if they would keep Jeff Ulbrich, who I think did a really good job as a defensive coordinator this year. A lot of interesting pieces in place for Atlanta, which, by the way, is playing in the weakest division in football right now. So I think that would be a really intriguing spot for any of these candidates.
Absolutely. And, you know, real quick before we move on to the next segment here, you got to think that there's maybe a team or two playing in the upcoming Super Wild Card weekend where if the results don't favor the organization, they may be ones that are going to come out calling for guys like Kevin Stefanski or especially John Harbaugh. And the team that comes to my mind, obviously, is the team that I hate the most, and that's the Buffalo Bills. We kind of talked a little bit offline about this, but if the Buffalo Bills of the year that where they're, you know, they're billed as the favorite out of the AFC, they go down and they lose on the road in Jacksonville this weekend, you have to think that the Pegulas up there in Buffalo are going to be thinking long and hard about whether or not they want to continue this with McDermott and pursue a guy like John Harbaugh. As a Patriots fan, I would hate to see John Harbaugh go to that team. I would hate it. I love clowning on McDermott and how they fall short all the time, but like, I'd be very, very, very scared if John Harbaugh went up there. So any other teams playing this weekend that you think might be looking for a head coach if the results don't favor them this weekend?
No, I mean, I think the Bills are the team, for a number of different reasons. You can't knock Sean McDermott's regular season record. You can't knock the fact that they repeatedly get double digit wins, but it's a fair criticism that he has repeatedly fallen short in the playoffs with arguably the best quarterback in football. If not the best quarterback in football, a top three quarterback in Josh Allen. I'm with you. I don't, pretend to know what the Pegulas are thinking, but if they are a one and done this year, John Harbaugh is an intriguing candidate. And what I thought was fascinating earlier in the week, I believe it was Adam Schefter reported that he spoke to John Harbaugh's agent, who said that seven teams immediately reached out to him after Harbaugh parted ways with the Ravens. Well, there's only six available job openings for Harbaugh right now. He's not getting rehired by Baltimore. So there are only six available openings. And if you believe that the agent did in fact get seven calls, that does mean that currently a team who has a head coach at least, reached out to find out what Harbaugh's interest would be in them, which would mean an impending firing. I don't know if it was the Buffalo Bills, but I do think it's a fair question to ask. I know we had Rand Carthon, the former Titans general manager, on earlier this season, and his response to "Is McDermott on the hot seat?" was, "Well, who are you going to find better?" I mean, I think you have an answer that John Harbaugh potentially is better. But again, a lot of things have to fall into place. First things first, the Bills would have to be a one and done. I can't imagine a scenario where the Bills go to the divisional round or the conference finals and then the Pegulas make a change, because from a practical standpoint, you would think that John Harbaugh would have made his decision by then. Yeah. And I don't think Harbaugh's waiting around to see what happens with the Bills, but because the game is coming up in several days, I don't think Harbaugh's going to make a decision that quickly. So I think he would still be available. It's really an intriguing discussion. If you're a Bills fan, this has got to be your year. We're going to get into the pick segment in a second, but no Joe Burrow, no Lamar Jackson, no Patrick Mahomes in the AFC playoffs. I mean, there's one man standing from the quarterback position in that conference, and it's Josh Allen. If he cannot get it done this year, it's a fair question to ask whether he'll ever be able to get it done with his current head coach.
It's going to be fun to see. So let's get right into talking about this Super Wild Card weekend coming up here. We're going to start with the first game of the weekend in the 4:30 slot on Saturday. It's the Los Angeles Rams traveling to the 8-9 Carolina Panthers, the winners of that dreadful NFC South. Manish, who do you got in this game?
Yeah, look, the first meeting earlier this year was such an aberration. The Rams were on a 6-game winning streak. Through those first 11 games of the season, Matthew Stafford threw only 2 interceptions. And then in the first quarter against the Carolina Panthers, he threw 2 interceptions, including a pick 6. So I don't think that you can bank on that happening again. And I believe Stafford said this week that the story of that first game was pretty simple. He threw the ball to the other team, and that just can't happen. Because if you look a little bit closer at how the Rams fared in that game, on the ground, Blake Corum and Kyren Williams were exceptional. They combined for 20 carries for over 150 yards. So it's not as if the Panthers were stopping them. I think the number, however, is really big. Clearly the largest spread of Super Bowl wild card weekend, 10.5 points, road favorites for the Rams. I don't think they're going to cover. And that's not because I don't think they're going to win. I think they will win the game. They probably will win it comfortably. But when you take a little bit deeper dive, the Carolina Panthers are 8-0 against the spread after a loss this season. And they did lose to Tampa in week 18. So I think it'll be somewhat competitive, or at least for the first half of the game, maybe the first 3 quarters of the game. Ultimately, I do believe that the Rams will control this game and you will not see Matthew Stafford play the way that he did early in that first matchup. So I anticipate that the Rams would win. I just love the 10.5 number, though. 10.5 points for a home playoff team, even one that's under 500, to me is too much to pass up. So I'll take the Panthers and the points, but I do think the Rams are going to move on.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of am going to echo that statement. I mean, it's funny. We were joking about it a couple of weeks ago when I was like, I'm feeling good about them Panthers. You know, keep pounding. Let's go. They're not going to be if they play the Rams in the playoffs again. And I feel kind of the same way. I'm taking the Panthers plus the points. I do think that the LA Rams are going to win this game. There's more playoff experience. There's more coaching experience. There's more experience on both sides, everywhere on that Rams team. Than the Panthers. The Panthers were a very nice story this year. It's cool to see them kind of get back to relevance under Dave Kanellis and with Bryce Young as their quarterback after what was a dreadful, you know, season last year for that team. But I think they come up short. I'm gonna take the points, but the Rams are gonna win this game.
I mean, it'd be a great story if the Panthers pulled this off. I can't see it. Davante Adams is getting back into the mix.
Yeah, so exactly.
That's just going to be another weapon for Matthew Stafford. And look, they couldn't stop either running back on the ground last time. Stafford's not going to be loose with the ball like he was the first time around. I mean, maybe we're both foolish and it's going to be a blowout, but it's just too big of a number for a home team to receive in a playoff game, regardless of, you know, the disparity in record.
Well, Joe's not going to get free of that foolish take if the Rams win, because Joe also is on the Panthers plus the points bandwagon here. I am going to give you his picks. He was kind enough to give them to us here before the episode. But excuse me, let's move on to the next game, the Saturday night slot. It's the Green Bay Packers taking on Manish's favorite team, his favorite team, the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears are a 1-point home underdog in this game. Look, I'm taking the Bears plus one. I gotta kind of put my money where my mouth is, where I was saying that I was on them first earlier this year, where I was like, they deserve to be in our top five rankings. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stick with them. I really like what Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson are doing there. Green Bay, they're very Jekyll and Hyde. Jordan Love is coming back after a couple weeks off. We don't know if there's going to be a rust factor there. I think that the Bears have something. They got the home field in this one. It's the rubber match of the season series between these two teams. I just like the Bears to kind of get over that hump. I'm not 100% sold on them, but I'm not calling them frauds and the fakest 11 and whatever record they are, Manish, like you. So I do believe that the Bears are going to win this game.
Yeah, look, fraud is a relative term. They're not frauds relative to actual frauds like the Jets, for example. Yeah. But you know, within the framework of the playoff, I had to get that in. Within the framework of the playoff setup, I think they're a fraudulent two seed. How many two seeds in the first playoff game are underdogs? And that doesn't happen very often in a 2-7 setup. Obviously, it's a new playoff setup, so there wasn't a 7. You know, 5-10 years ago, but I think Vegas knows. I think Vegas knows that this is essentially a toss-up game, and if not for the uncertainty over how Jordan Love will look coming off of his concussion, I think this might have been a 2.5 or 3.5 point line for the Packers on the road. Interesting schedule set up this year in that they played each other in weeks 14 and 16. Division rivals didn't play each other for the majority of the season. And, you know, within 3 weeks, they played each other twice. You know, the Packers won the first game, the second game in Chicago. They probably would have won if not for Love getting injured in the first half. And if not for a onside kick recovery, which, you know, rarely happens. I think the number this year was something like 8%. So it was clearly a fluky win. You know, you give Caleb Williams a lot of credit at the end of that game, making a perfect pass to DJ Moore to win it. You can't take that away from him, but that was all set up by just a fluky set of circumstances. And, you know, I learned a lot about the Bears last week. You know, I already thought they were a pretty fraudulent double-digit win team. As much as I love what Ben Johnson has done in terms of turning around the organization, as much as I love the fact that Caleb Williams has really made a significant jump in year two. But I learned a lot from a team that, you know, really should have won that game at home, week 18, against a dead and buried Lions team. And they couldn't do it. I mean, they rallied after being down by 16, but ultimately couldn't pull it off. I don't think that they are going to win this game. I think I've been adamant about that. If Jordan Love, you know, isn't particularly rusty, you know, he said earlier this week he's not concerned about any residual rust. Who knows? You know, guy coming off a concussion, you never know if it takes him a few quarters, and you never know if it takes him an entire game to ultimately get back. But I just think they're a better team. I know Micah Parsons is not there. That's a storyline that's been, I think, talked about plenty. I do like some of that running game and that toughness that the Bears offer, but this should have been a season sweep for Green Bay. I think that they will bounce back from that fluky loss and win on the road and then, you know, head up to Seattle. So again, you know, the number two seed as an underdog, it doesn't happen, and it's happening for a reason. I think Vegas knows that the Packers are a better football team.
Well, Joe's with me. Joe's on the Bears train with me. So we got our first disagreement in our picks here. Let's move on to another home underdog. It's the 1 p.m. slot on Sunday. It's the 12-5 wildcard Buffalo Bills traveling to the AFC South division winners of eight straight, I believe.
Yeah.
Eight straight Jacksonville Jaguars with first-year head coach Liam Cohn. Who you got, Manish?
Yeah, look, this pains me. It pains me to make this pick simply because you guys know I am such a Josh Allen fan. What I don't know is how healthy is Josh Allen. I know that, you know, he's practicing fully this week, but he's as tough as it comes. You know, his foot clearly was bothering him a couple weeks ago when they played the Eagles, but he didn't say that it was bothering him. He's not an excuse maker. I love the player. I love everything about him. However, I have to be honest with myself and say that I was wrong about the Jacksonville Jaguars earlier this season. They have proven time and time again, you know, you're talking about a team that I believe also ended the season on an 8-game winning streak. Trevor Lawrence is playing the best football of his career. Liam Cohn is getting the best out the former number one overall pick. You know, they're solid on offense, they're solid on defense. And from a betting standpoint, the Jaguars are 7-1 against the spread this season at home. It's essentially also a pick'em game. It's also the highest total of the weekend. The over-under is 52. So Vegas expects, you know, a little bit of scoring in this game. I think it's going to be a fun game. I believe I said it a couple days ago. It's one of the two games that I am most looking forward to on Super Wild Card weekend. I just think that the Jaguars are a better football team. The best player on the field in that game is Josh Allen. The better team is Jacksonville. And that's why I'm picking the Jaguars to move on, which would make for, as we just said, a very interesting offseason for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah. Well, there's no question on who I'm taking in this game. I'm taking the Jaguars. I mean, obviously I hate the Bills. I just think the Jaguars are just playing outstanding football. If you look at their 8-game win streak, out of those 8 games, two of them were decided by one score. The rest were blowouts. The rest were blowouts. They kind of just ran the table. They blew the Chargers out, who are another playoff team. They blew out the Broncos, who were the one seed in the conference. You know, they're at home, South Florida. I like them to win this game. Joe agrees. So we got another clean sweep across the board for this game here. So I'm gonna be glued to my seat for that one as the native Bills hater here on the podcast. So let's move it along. Your team time 4:30 on Sunday. It's the San Francisco 49ers traveling to Philadelphia, all the way across the country, to take on the Eagles at 4:30 on Sunday. I had to think about this one for a little bit because I really like what the 49ers have been doing this year, especially the coaching job that Kyle Shanahan has done, navigating the plethora of injuries that team has fought all season, starting two different quarterbacks. They have Mac Jones and Brock Purdy in there. And, you know, they were one game away from the one seed in the conference. So, you know, if they had won in week 18 against the Seahawks, they'd be the one seed and they'd be host. They wouldn't even be playing this weekend. That said, I'm going with the Eagles minus the points. You know, the West to East travel, you know, factors in here, I think, a little bit. And, you know, the Eagles, despite their flaws, despite their issues, especially offensively, they've found ways to win. And, you know, you can look at the Buffalo game where maybe it took Josh Allen missing a wide open receiver for them to win that game at the end. But all season, and despite their little midseason slump that they had there, despite that, they're finding ways to win games. And I'm not going to bet against the defending champs in Super Wild Card weekend here. I'm gonna lay the points with the Eagles and roll with it.
Yeah, well, I am gonna bet against the defending champs.
Shocker!
But it comes with a caveat. I think the Eagles will win this game. You know, for weeks I've been telling anybody who would listen that any of the three NFC West teams, Niners, Rams, Seahawks, would obliterate the Eagles. And, you know, as we've gotten closer to this game and as the injuries have piled up, I've really, you're taking a good hard look at what this 49er defense actually is right now. And I'm a believer in Robert Saleh as a defensive coordinator. I think his schemes are terrific. You know, the one and only time that he actually faced the Eagles as a head coach, Jalen Hurts threw three interceptions in a game that Zach Wilson and the Jets beat the Eagles at several years back. But I just think that Robert Saleh doesn't have the horses right now. Guys are, you know, injured left and right. What I thought was a startling factoid is that the week one opening day roster, the 53-man roster, had five linebackers. Three of those linebackers are currently on injured reserve. The other two are on the injury report. So they are just banged up. You know, we already know about Warner. And you mentioned some of the guys on offense. You know, Purdy missed essentially half the season. Kittle missed, what, six games? We don't know if Ricky Pearsall is going to play this week. We don't know if their future Hall of Fame left tackle, Trent Williams, who I believe is dealing with a hamstring injury, we don't know if he's going to play or what he looks like. I just think that the injuries have caught up with them. I believe that Kyle Shanahan deserves Coach of the Year consideration, but typically Coach of the Year goes to a guy who is taking over a team with very low preseason expectations, as opposed to the Niners, who were obviously in the mix for the NFC title before the season began. But the fact that he has endured all of these injuries to high-end players, yet, as you mentioned earlier, came within one game of being the number one seed is startling to me. It's really a testament to Kyle Shanahan. Now, that being said, he is facing Vic Fangio and has not had a good history against Vic Fangio defenses. And I believe this week, Shanahan actually said that there were three different times over the past several years where he tried to hire Vic Fangio to be the 49ers defensive coordinator, but it never really matched up. You know, in the four games, I believe that Fangio and Shanahan have locked horns, a Shanahan offense has scored a total of 41 points in those four games. Now, there were a couple games where they're backup quarterbacks, so you have some allowances for that. But the bottom line is that, you know, Fangio is a formidable opponent for Shanahan, who I believe is a brilliant offensive mind. You know, all that being said, I cannot ignore the offensive struggles that the Eagles have had. So that's why the 4.5 number is a big number for me. And I will gladly take the 4.5 points and the Niners, who are 7-2 against the spread on the road. Ultimately, this is a fourth quarter game. I think Jake Elliott, who's had his fair share of struggles this season in Philadelphia, will make a pivotal kick down the stretch. I think the Eagles squeak this one out. I would have loved to see a game in which a healthy 49ers team came to Philadelphia, but that's not reality. You know, the Eagles are getting a little bit healthier as well. You would expect right tackle Lane Johnson to be back. I think it'll be a low-scoring, gritty, old-school playoff game, and it's in Philadelphia. I think they win. I think they win by the skin of their teeth, but I'll gladly take the 4.5 points for San Francisco.
Joe's with you. Joe's with you with the Niners on that one. So yeah. Difference with me. Let's move on to the fun Sunday night game. You know, this is our team, Patriots. Well, Joe and I's team. I can't rope Manish into that. We all know how that's gone all year. But I'm obviously going to take the Patriots in this game. The way they've played, the only way that this season ends in a disappointing manner for the Patriots is if they don't win a playoff game. In my eyes, if they don't win a playoff game and they lose to a 7-seed Chargers team that is decimated by injuries themselves, their offensive line is in shambles. Justin Herbert's been playing with a fractured wrist, you know, took last week off. So he may have some rust factor in this as well. It's another west to east travel, warm weather team coming to a cold weather environment. I like the Patriots to take the step here. So I'm riding with my team. Joe's in the same boat too. I wonder where you are.
Yeah, look, the Patriots are 2-2 against playoff teams. One of those playoff teams has a losing record in Carolina. So essentially 1-2 against winning teams this year. I think the weakest strength of schedule since 1978. You can't control who you play. Drake May has made a remarkable step forward in year two. The 3.5 number, however, is really too much for me to ignore. They haven't really played any great quarterbacks start to finish in a game other than Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers, and they're 1-2 in those games. Justin Herbert, to me, falls into the category of great quarterback. Unfortunately for the Patriots, I do not believe that they're going to be able to take advantage of the Chargers' biggest weakness, and that's their offensive line, because I don't think New England's pass rush is anything to write home about. I think, in fact, that's their weakness in their defensive front. So I don't think that's going to be a concern. If they had a better defensive front, a better pass rush, I would think differently. But the 3.5 points for the Chargers, to me, is too much. Say what you want about Justin Herbert in the playoffs and coming up small, he's had the experience. And I think that is something that doesn't get talked about enough. Drake May, incredible second season, but it is the first foray into the playoffs. I'll be fascinated to see the Josh McDaniels, Jesse Minter matchup, Patriots offense versus Chargers defense. I think it'll be a fun game. The Bills-Jags are the other game that I think will be on the marquee as far as I'm concerned. I love this game. I'm not going to be surprised if it goes either way. I love when you have two young stud quarterbacks, one who's established, one who is clearly becoming a star player in this league. I just ultimately think that the lack of playoff experience, plus the fact that they haven't really been tested by good teams that much this year, will ultimately catch up to the Patriots, which, even if they're one and done, it's been an incredibly successful season for Drake May, Josh McDaniels, and Mike Vrabel.
Nice little hedge there at the end.
Just call it like I see it.
Yeah. Final game of the slate, Monday night. It's the Texans at the Steelers. For me, this is an easy choice. It took the Ravens missing a field goal with a kicker who hadn't missed from that distance all year to make the playoffs, despite having the opportunity the week before where they laid an egg against the Browns. I'm not concerned about the Steelers. The Texans, albeit their defense has been a little shaky over the last couple of weeks, giving up a lot of points, I still believe in that defense over there. And I expect kind of another like low scoring, grinded out type game. I'm taking the Texans minus the points. I'll lay the points with the Texans. Joe's with me on that, minus the points. Laying them. Who you got, Manish?
Yeah, I agree with both of you. You know, defense travels, and the Texans defense is ferocious. During their 9-game winning streak to end the season, they faced Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen. They sacked those three quarterbacks a total of 18 times. And Aaron Rodgers is not nearly as mobile as any of those three guys. So I think this defensive line of Houston is going to control this game. And even though I'm not the biggest fan of C.J. Stroud, I just think this defense will suffocate Pittsburgh, regardless of the fact that they're playing in Pittsburgh. Because, again, you can take this defense to Mars, and I think the Texans would still beat the Pittsburgh Steelers.
There you have it. There's our super wild card weekend preview. I can't wait to watch playoff football all weekend. I'm hoping my kids get into it with me. They're still little, but we'll see. But Enjoy the wild card weekend, and we will catch you on the flip side.